And it was so freeing. Like, I felt like I had won the lottery with this information because I was still able to homeschool and we weren't crying because we figured out other ways to do it. I mean, yeah. It sounds so simple to say, yeah, do the lessons verbally if she doesn't want to write it with a pencil, but that was new to me.
Welcome to Everyday Homeschool. No matter where you're at in your homeschooling journey, this podcast will equip, inspire, and encourage you in your everyday homeschooling life. In this episode, I talked to Nikki Truesdell. She has been around homeschooling for 40 years, and she brings a lot of insight and wisdom to this conversation. It was really fun to hear how her homeschooling has looked different at different seasons in her life. You just get the sense of talking to her that she is very resilient. She's very committed to homeschooling. And she's had that commitment tested with some really hard circumstances, which she shares. She has a book called Anyone Can Homeschool, and she has lived through a lot of things to be able to say that. And I often say anyone can homeschool who really wants to. And so it was really fun to just hear her perspective on that. So without further ado, let's say hi to Nikki. Hello, Nikki. Thank you for joining me.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited you're here. So I read your whole book. Anyone Can Homeschool. I love that title.
Thank you.
Just tell me a little bit about homeschool journey, your family, your background.
Sure. Well, my homeschool journey is in its 40th year this year.
Oh my God.
I was actually homeschooled starting in 1983 when I was 11 years old. At that time, my mom and dad pulled my sister and me out of public school and started homeschooling on the advice and with the encouragement of some local friends. And so I started out as a homeschool kid and I absolutely loved it.
And right away.
It was because of that. Yes, I did. And it was because of that that I became a homeschool mom. Before I ever got married and had kids, there was no question that that's what I would do for my kids.
Wow.
And the reasons I loved it as a kid, mainly it was just all the free time we had.
Yeah,
honestly, we were in charge of our schedules. And so our family had a lot of time together and my sister and I had lots of time after our schoolwork was finished to do whatever we wanted. And so we did explore hobbies and interests and all kinds of things. It was just such a nice way to grow up. And
yeah,
so
that's amazing.
I was homeschooled through the 12th grade. Now in my senior year, I actually did attend a local Christian private school because most of my friends were going there and they invited me to join them. And I begged my mom and dad. And so they let me go there. So that's where I actually graduated from, went on to college and got a bachelor's degree in business and worked for a couple of years and got married. But when my first daughter was coming, I quit my job. I worked from home a little bit, but mainly I was a full-time homemaker. I probably started really homeschooling her as soon as she was old enough to let me read stories to her.
Yeah, right.
Baby school. Colors. I did. I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to homeschool. So
okay. My
oldest got a lot of that as soon as she was able. So that was the year 2000 when I officially started homeschooling. I have five kids.
Did it already feel different, like what was available? And did you know people homeschooling compared to when you grew up or not really yet?
It was very different because of all the things that were available. So much more. The internet was, you know, really exploding. And so there were neat things to find online. But of course, just all of the different materials available to use with my daughter were so much different than what I had in the 80s. Now, I did stay connected with homeschoolers. It was in my family. So not only did our family homeschool in the 80s, but my aunt homeschooled her two children in the 80s.
Okay.
And she had two kids, but then much later in life, she had one more. And so her daughter was just a little bit older than mine. And so it stayed in the family. So when I was ready to homeschool, she still had a child homeschooling. And so we connected with other homeschoolers in our area who had been doing it through the 90s. So yes, there was already a built-in homeschool community, which kind of grew out of the one that I grew up in. It was just kind of growing and spreading in our area.
That makes sense.
So it was very fortunate that we naturally had a group just to jump in with.
Yeah, that's neat. And so then you were saying you have five kids.
I have five kids. They are teenagers and adults now. And I have two grandchildren. So I'm excited about the next generation.
Love that.
My daughter said she wants me to help her homeschool and I can't wait.
Yeah, you're like ready to go again.
I am. Yeah. Oh, I miss those little years. Oh, yes.
I could see that actually.
It's very different because now I just have two left that are homeschooling and they are 13 and 15. And it's so much different than I've ever had it before. It's easier in a way. Yeah. We've done this high school thing quite a few times. And these two kind of prefer to be self-taught, which I don't like. I like group school, I like group activities. So that's been kind of a transition for me.
Yeah.
So I am looking forward to the grandkids. Yeah.
Neat. Okay. So how long did you say you'd been homeschooling your own kid?
So this is 23 years now.
Oh my goodness. 23 years. Do you have a favorite season?
My kids are out in age. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. I read that in your book. Like you had two and then a kind of a gap.
Yeah. So my youngest and oldest are 14 years apart, if that helps.
So you probably
I have been homeschooling a long time.
Yes. But you had high school. Like what was the most grades or whatever that you had homeschooling?
Well, by the time the baby was ready to homeschool, my oldest was graduating. So usually it was always four at the most with preschool, you know, a preschooler doing her thing. But yeah, it has been pretty crazy at times, but it's the kind of crazy I loved. So I do miss that. I miss all of the whole family homeschooling. And obviously there were days where the crazy was too much. And I had to go in my room and shut the door in the afternoon and just, you know, kind of.
I thought that was maybe like every day.
Not every day, but some days. And especially when everybody was doing math, that was when I almost thought I'd lose it, but I missed it. So I miss it and I can't wait to help my grandkids.
So what are your older kids, your kids who are gone or out of the house now, like what do they look back and say about homeschooling?
Oh, they are all for it.
They are.
They never, ever asked for something different. So I'm very thankful that they loved homeschooling all the way through. They never asked for public school or even, you know, to go to private school. My two daughters who are older are both grown. They absolutely are all for homeschooling their own kids. And my third one, who's my oldest son, he's 18 and he, you know, he wouldn't do nothing different. And so he's obviously not married with children or anything, but all of my kids say that they would homeschool, hopefully with grandmother's help.
Oh man, you're gonna have a full house. That's like a legit school. You're gonna have like a school in your house.
That would be fun.
That would be really fun.
My aunt that I told you about, who was also homeschooling in the 80s, is kind of does something like that now with her great grandbabies.
Oh my God.
She calls it baby school. And once a week, all of the youngest toddlers come over and she does fun activities with them.
I love that.
I can't wait.
I just think it's changing the world.
It is. It is changing the world. And I am not afraid to say it.
Okay. Your book title, Anyone Can Homeschool. Like, why are you so passionate about that statement?
Well, because I have been through most of the difficulties that people would look at and say, oh, because of this, I can't.
Right.
I've actually been there and did it. And I didn't do it for the purpose of writing a book, obviously. But over these 23 years, I've experienced quite a few difficult circumstances and kept homeschooling because I was adamant that that was not going to change, no matter what else changed in my life. And so through many trials and very difficult times, we just kept going. And the reason I started saying anyone can homeschool was when the popularity of vouchers started to come around and many states and homeschoolers wanting them, pushing them.
Yeah.
And I am totally against that. I'm totally against government funded homeschooling because I believe it's no longer private.
Right.
And so when I would say that, people would say, well, not everyone can homeschool the way you do, or not everyone can homeschool. So we need the money to do it. And that's when I started saying, no, anyone can homeschool.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I spent so much time saying that and trying to tell my story that my husband said, you need to put this in a book.
Mm.
And so that's what happened. I did.
You're like, what should we call the book? I don't know.
Yeah. It was natural. This is what you've been saying along. Let's make it the book. And so I definitely have a soft spot for single parents who homeschool or who want to.
Yep.
Also people who feel like they don't have the budget for it or who really want to go from two incomes to one or just live on a single income.
Right.
But I dealt with several things over these years, including chronic illness and sometimes a blend of single parent, full-time work, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
And I could say, yes, it can be done. I know it from experience, but I also knew a lot of other people doing the same thing. And so I got their stories collected too.
Yes,
so
I loved that
people could see, doesn't matter what kind of life you live or your budget or where you live or what your work is, you can do this. And the hard part was getting people to understand why homeschooling is different from what they know as education.
Yes.
And so that's how the book starts.
Yes. Okay. So do you think one of the major blocks for people is just what they're picturing as homeschooling is not what actually homeschooling is?
I think it's the number one block.
Yeah.
Because we're used to the American public school system. Almost everybody has been there.
Yep.
And even the private schools are just an expensive copy of public school.
Of like a very specific structure.
Yes. Yes. Very specific year, days, subjects. You know, everybody does the same list.
Right.
Everybody does kindergarten through 12, 7 hours a day, September through May, all of that. And so people think, well, that's how school is done. And so one of the most important things I think people need to understand is that's not necessarily the only way school is done.
Right.
It can be if you want it. And a lot of people really thrive on that structure.
Yep.
But for many people, the structure just doesn't work. It won't fit in their life. It won't fit with their circumstances or their budget. And so what I try to do is help them understand it's just education on your schedule, on your budget, wherever you are, whatever day it is.
Like you said, you brought your kids to work with you sometimes, right?
I did. Yes, many times. I have friends that do the same and have done the same, or they started working from home and homeschooled around that schedule.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. The possibilities are kind of endless. And that's why I can't give one answer for how to do that, except to say it doesn't matter how, it just matters that you keep going forward.
That's so good. Tell me more about, you said you've been through most of the hardest things. I know you mentioned chronic illness, single parenting. If you're comfortable sharing, like what was the hardest circumstance you were in where not that you felt like, oh, now I just need to send my kids out of the home, but maybe had a moment of desperation. Like, how are we going to do this? Because I do have people asking me that, like they have four kids and under four and they bring home a new baby and they're like, actually, how are we going to survive?
That's a good question. Probably the first hardest time for me was being a single mom and needing an income.
Yeah.
I was so broke and my daughters were 2 and 6. And so that was hard. And I was newly divorced. I had left an abusive husband and we didn't have a house. We didn't have anything at all. And so I had to start from scratch. And I also didn't want the girls to go to school and daycare, and I needed money. So that was kind of it was a lot of needs. And so,
and trauma.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I kept in mind was that the girls had already gone through something pretty traumatic as far as leaving their home and their dad.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to add something new and difficult. So, for me, the idea of also adding in strange babysitters and teachers and, you know, they'd never been to public school. I didn't want that. I wanted them to be home with me so that if they struggled, which they did, if they had difficult days or nights, you know, it was okay because I was there and I didn't have to worry about getting enough sleep because I had to be at my job at 8 o'clock in the morning, things like that. But I was able to walk with them through all of those difficult times and then also the good, you know, the good times where we went to the park and watched movies or whatever.
Yeah.
As far as having school, it was hit and miss. And it was through all of these difficult years that I learned something very important, which is that it doesn't take 12 years to educate a child. A few years ago, I wrote a blog post about that. And
I think I saw that. Did it go viral?
It did.
Or I've just heard people quote you over and over.
Yeah. Well, it's very important to understand that because if we think, I've got to be having school every single day for 12 years. And then if we don't, if we miss days or months, we feel like a failure and we think we're messing up our kids and they're going to have to go to school just to catch up. It's very stressful. But what I learned through a lot of trial and error also is that it doesn't take 12 years to get an even better education than a public school. It just takes focus and consistency and understanding a lot about the public education system as far as what's wasteful time and what's necessary and unnecessary, what's busy work. And so that applied to every single year that we went through difficult times. And so that was part of my single motherhood years. And then later, I was fortunate enough to remarry and our family grew, but we went through a lot of financial hardships early on in our marriage. And so there was not a budget for curriculum. In fact, there was almost not a budget for me to stay home. And so I worked part-time, you know. What I did then was try to work opposite my husband's schedule so that my kids were still home with parents. Yeah. And again, that whole school year, 12 years thing came into play because there was numerous times when we didn't have school every day. I tell this story in my book. I think I did. It's on my website too, but I figured out with my second daughter that teaching her to read at around 8 years old did not hurt her. And from that point forward, I didn't rush it with any of my kids, and they are all excellent readers. Despite the fact that the girls all started late, my boys actually read early. It didn't matter. They're all excellent readers. It all evens out. And, and it doesn't take starting at 5 years old and, you know, doing multiple subjects all the way through 12th grade. It just takes an open mind and understanding what children really need to be educated.
And how do you suggest, so say someone says to you, okay, but how do I understand how kids need to learn? I think that piece of it, like,
it's overwhelming.
They may even buy into like, okay, yes, that makes sense to me. We don't need 180 days, 7 hours a day, you know, 12 years, but like, how do I know how they learn or what it takes?
That's a really good question. And that's my second book, actually. It's long in the works, but that's what I'm working on. But what I would say is if you open any curriculum, you start noticing that there's a lot of repetition. There's a lot of review from last year. There seems to be some unnecessary busy work a lot of the time. And so it takes, number one, takes courage. And the willingness to do something different than you've done before, which is hard. It is hard. But just be courageous and assess each thing that you've got. So if you've got just a basic curriculum and you notice that there's maybe crossword puzzles every week, or you start to notice, you just kind of start to get a sense of what's necessary and what's not.
Your kid starts like falling off the chair and you're like, maybe this isn't effective. Maybe they're bored.
Maybe 50 math problems a day isn't necessary, you know? So that's one of those things. Lots and lots and lots of math drill. If your kids get the concept, it's time to move on. You know, there's no sense in drilling them to death just for the sake of schoolwork. The same way with grammar. I figured this one out long before I even had that phrase in my head that it doesn't take 12 years. I kept thinking, they know this. They know what all the parts of speech are. They know their punctuation. Why are we still doing this? And I thought, maybe we don't need grammar every year, you know?
I've started telling people I don't think you have to do all the subjects all the time. And I like, it's totally intuitive.
You're right.
I just have thought that. I don't have any like proof, or I don't have 23 years of it, but I'm like, I mean,
well, you are right.
If we skip history 1 month to like renovate our house or build a garden or something, I don't think long term my 7-year-old is gonna not get history.
No, it's, I'll tell you. Here's how I look at subjects. Math is absolutely necessary. Reading is absolutely necessary. Most everything else builds on those two. So I start now with just reading, teaching phonics. And then if they're interested, they can start copying words. If they're not ready to write with a pencil, I don't force it yet.
Yeah, because some kids are ready to read before they're ready to sit there and form all the letters.
Exactly. And then often most curriculum has them doing both at the same time when that it takes different kinds of skills. And so maybe they're ready to read 2 years before they're ready to start writing with a pencil. And that's okay. Once they get, and this is in my house, once they get reading kind of flowing, then I start math.
Okay.
And so that might be 7 or 8 years old, 9 years old.
And
honestly,
say,
I have waited that long.
One thing I noticed with my subsequent kids, You know, like you, with my first child, I was very eager. We were all in. So I was doing all the things when she was three, you know. She's like, ABC. I'm like, let's go. But my other kids, I just couldn't keep up, didn't get around to it, had a lot going on.
Yeah.
I would notice by the time I got to kindergarten math or whatever, it's like they already had picked it up. And I remember looking through the whole kindergarten math textbooks, like count to 10, count to 20. Like they already know this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've used MathUC for most of our homeschooling years.
Okay.
And I like it because each book is basically one concept.
Yeah.
So the first book is adding. And it doesn't spend a lot of time on a lot of other stuff. Now, you'll get a little introduction to clocks and money and stuff like that. But I skip that because I teach my kids when they're ready to count with real money and to look at a real clock.
That's what we
and
do.
So
too.
I don't worry about that. You know, why do we need worksheets if they already do this
tell
stuff?
Time. Yeah.
Clock oh, yeah. Worksheet. And money, they want to learn that really young. So give them some actual money. I would just pour out a jar of coins on the table and say, let's count, find 27 cents or whatever, you know. And that's so much more fun. And it's not school. And then you can skip that part of the workbook.
Yeah. That's so much freedom. So, I think people who are new in homeschooling and coming out of traditional school, you want to look around and be like, am I allowed to do this? Can we just count money?
Be the boss of yourself.
But that's so good. Like, be the boss. You're in charge. Yeah. You're the grown up.
Even calendar, that's one of those kindergarten things that we don't do in the workbook. We just look at the calendar.
You just have a calendar in your house.
If you've got a calendar on the wall, then that's where you teach them. And it's just through life. Like, what is the date today? Do we have anything going on Thursday? What's happening on the 27th? You know, all of that is just life. Like, that's real life. You don't have to put it in a workbook. So that's the concept. And like I said, we don't do grammar every year. We don't do science every year. I don't really start teaching them history until upper elementary, middle school. Now, I will say we read books all the time. So a lot of our books do involve history.
So when you say we don't do history, you mean you're not working through a formal history curriculum with your seven-year-old who's learning to read, but you are reading all kinds of books, right? So they're getting it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because I had a big group for so long, everyone who was younger was sitting in and hearing the history lessons with the older ones, because I do a whole family style thing. And so even though they weren't doing a history curriculum, I would have them sit in the living room and play something quietly while we were doing that. So they heard the lessons and then they were ready for those times when they were older. They were already trained to sit and listen and discuss and, you know, have a couple hours of a history lesson. We probably don't start writing until about middle school, like actual writing curriculum.
Essays, yes. Okay, you're the second person I've heard say that in the last year. And
good.
It's funny. I was at the gym when I first heard it, and I was thinking to myself, this is revolutionary. Huh. I had the same feeling. Is this allowed? And so I just said, you know what? We're going to take this semester off of our writing curriculum and see what happens. And there's so many more things we've enjoyed. I think my kids' spelling has gotten better. Because it's all relevant.
You know, spelling is something that I quit doing altogether.
Okay, tell me about that.
And this was through trial and error on my part. Because I am a natural speller.
Same.
But I was part public school and then homeschool. And then I had spelling lessons even in my homeschool. So I just thought, okay, that's what you do to make good spellers. You spell them to death.
Have tests every Friday, and, right?
Yes. And it wasn't working for my daughters. And so it was my first two daughters that I really did this a lot to. And I mean, we kept trying new curriculum and new methods and different lists. And I got so frustrated, I just quit for a while. I just thought, I don't know what we're going to use, but we're not doing anything for right now. And then I realized that nothing was different, but they were just improving their spelling because they were reading books. They were doing copy work. And those two things right there build a natural speller. But most natural spelling, and when I say natural, I mean without being drilled to death, it comes from the usage of words and seeing them, writing them
in
over
context,
and over.
Yeah.
So Yes, and context matters too. And so even lists that are like, you know, all these words are from the months of the year, or these are all having to do with water, whatever, you know, there's always these like creative themes, lists.
Right.
They don't matter if they're not in context. And words, they mean so much more, and you understand how they're used more when you read them in a sentence or a story. Same with vocabulary. I quit using vocabulary lessons because you realize if you're reading a new word and it's in a paragraph, you generally can figure out what it means. Sometimes there is still that need to look them up. I mean, I still look up words.
Yep, same.
But a lot of the time you have a word and you've never seen it before, but you automatically get it because it's in a story. Right. Even my younger son, who's now 15, he said this to me when he was about 10. It just kind of hit him one day. He said, even if I read a new word, Mom, I don't have to look it up because I understand it from the sentence that it's in. And I thought, if a 10-year-old can get this, everybody can get this.
Yes, and right. So, it's so intuitive.
Just think of the subject time that you're freeing yourself from. If you don't have a spelling curriculum and a vocabulary curriculum and not a constant stream of grammar and a constant stream of writing, you know, there's so much freedom in learning things naturally. I have lots of blog posts on my website about language arts because it is not so hard. It can be very simple with a lot of reading. And even if your kids don't like to read, help them find things that they enjoy. Sometimes it just means finding the book that really, you know, grabs them. Audiobooks are good for this too, because then you hear the words pronounced and it gives them a break from reading with their eyes. But there are so much language arts that we overdo in our education system, and we're not getting good results from that. It can be so much easier. And so all of these ideas play into that whole not needing 12 years to educate a child.
Right.
You know, you don't need, like you said, 6 or 7 subjects every single year for 12 years. It's not necessary.
It's not necessarily how people learn well.
No, it's how the school systems teach, and that's not always working well.
Right. Totally. It's not. See, you said something about once you stopped using a spelling curriculum, you needed a break. Everyone was frustrated. And then your kids had more time to read. Maybe you read more to them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So if you had to pick, say you have like a new homeschooler and they're like, their kid is 9 and they're already reading and they're like, I'm not doing enough language arts. Would you advise them then to get some copy work going? Would that be more worthwhile, you think?
Absolutely. And make it fun, make it relevant to the kid or maybe to the lessons that you're doing.
Yeah. How did you do copy work? I know that's kind of a silly question, but like, did you have a book open? Did you get handwriting workbooks?
I've done so many different things. I have used purchased copy work books where it just had a whole bunch of different stuff. Maybe it was American history related, or maybe it was all for girls, you know, or from classic literature. I've bought those. I've downloaded free ones. Yeah. I've also let my kids copy from a book they're reading. I've encouraged them to copy what they thought was neat from the book, which I used to do. I grew up doing that. That's one of the natural things about me. I mean, by the time I was 12, I was filling notebooks with quotes because I loved reading and I loved words. I would just copy all my favorite stuff into a notebook. That's copy work. I didn't even know it then. I encourage my kids to do that. And I've had dedicated copy work from our history work. And so that might be a speech, a famous speech from history, maybe from a famous document. My two kids right now are finishing up copying Martin Luther's Here I Stand speech, you know, printed off in type. It's about 4 pages. So it's
a lot of
taking
writing,
a while.
Yeah.
Let me do a little bit a day.
And about a little bit a day. Like, do you structure time? Do you say just work on it until you're tired? Do you say do a page of written
Sometimes
work?
Sometimes I will say do it until you're tired, which, you know, I've had kids that hated writing, you know, the physical act of it. And so I don't overdo it. Yeah. So I don't want to make them hate it. So if they say, man, I'm so tired of this, I'll say, okay, stop there. Generally, I will look at something and say, do a paragraph today. You know, even in high school, unless you've got someone who is like me who loved it, you know, I don't try to push for more and more and more as long as the content is good.
Yeah, like a quality over quantity sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to have them copy words, I want them to be worthwhile. And so when they're copying Luther's speech, they're getting Protestant Reformation content like on overdrive. And it goes with the history lessons that we just recently studied. And they're reading a biography of Luther. And so it's all mixed up together. But while they're copying, they're getting some, you know, 16th century English, which is, well, it's translated from German, but a little bit older fashioned language, which is good exposure, words that they may not use all the time. And then what I ask them to do is do it in their neatest cursive or print. And sometimes I will let them type copy work. I have a son who, my 15-year-old, is a speed typer. He actually prefers to type all his copy work. And I let him a lot, but I also want him to get, you know, good, neat handwriting too. And so, of course, they're getting all the right spellings of words and grammar usage and punctuation, all the important things. And so you can see how if you do copy work on a regular basis, you really don't have a need for constant grammar and writing curriculum. I do use grammar and writing, but I don't do it every year.
All the time, right.
Copy work. Yeah. Copy work just fills in all that extra space.
That's right. Like I read some reviews on your website of some IEW products. And I think in those articles, you said, we used it this year and we probably won't use it next year. we'll trade off.
I will alternate. Yeah. Grammar one year, writing another year. And even both of those, we don't do all the time. I like their curriculum because it's very effective. And so I don't feel like it has to be done every single year.
And because it's very repetitive.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. My son who's graduated, he got a speeding ticket recently and the judge or the officer that he spoke to actually asked him to write a 5-page paper about speeding and the dangers of it. And he just sat down one night and just whipped it out. And I read it and I just thought to myself, well, that IEW curriculum paid off because
he did a keyword outline.
Yes. He didn't do the keyword outline, but it was well written because he had that knowledge.
The structure.
And I think he went through structure and style twice.
Okay.
One was the basic curriculum and the other one was one of the theme curriculum. I think it was the ancient history structure
and style. Oh, that one looks fun. Yeah.
So, you know, he didn't need year after year after year after year. He just needed to know how to do it and then to be able to put it into practice and then copy other people's good writing.
So. Yeah, kind of a combination. So what would you say, now you have the benefit of so much hindsight, obviously you can't just like, I wish you could just download it to new people, right? But when you think about the difference between your first child or second child, you were homeschooling, and then your youngest child turns 8 or 9 and you're ready to start, like what were some of the major differences where you're like, I'm not going to repeat X, I'm going to do this instead?
That is a good question. You know, even though I was homeschooled, we were very traditionally homeschooled with all the subjects. We had a time that we started and stopped and pretty similar to any school classroom. We just did that at home. Of course, it was the 80s and everybody did it
that way. That's what everybody did. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people still do. And I'm not knocking that, but I learned quickly that it didn't work with my first daughter. Number one, I started a curriculum that had her learning cursive in kindergarten. So we were trying to learn to read, learn to write in cursive, learn all the math, you know, kindergarten stuff, and then like a science curriculum. Like I had the whole package.
Right.
I decorated our living room like a kindergarten classroom. You know, I had
like
the bulletin board.
Yes.
Yep. I had it all. I was so excited. And I found out over a couple of years that she was not that kind of learner. But I had not ever researched learning styles or different homeschooling methods. I was just doing what I knew.
Right.
And she cried a lot. We both kind of
cried a lot. Yeah.
Yes. And it took me a while and asking questions and learning from others that I didn't have to do it the way that every school does it. In fact, I remember I read some from Mary Hood, the relaxed homeschooler.
Yes.
I read from Chris Davis, who had the Elijah Company. He talked about so many out of the box things. And I emailed Sally Clarkson a long time ago and I said, do I have to do all these questions in this language book? And she said, absolutely not. She even said, or just ask them to your daughter and let her tell you the answers. You don't have to do it all with a pencil. And so I got information from others who had already done this, and it really opened my eyes to how things could be different. How they didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was so freeing. Like, I felt like I had won the lottery with this information because I was still able to homeschool and we weren't crying because we figured out other ways to do it. I mean, yeah. It sounds so simple to say, yeah, do the lessons verbally if she doesn't want to write it with a pencil. But that was new to me.
It hadn't occurred to you. Oh,
yeah. So yes, from the first daughter to the last one, huge difference. But I would say by the second kid, that's when I was in the middle of single motherhood, working, trying to figure out how we were going to survive. And so the stuff I figured out along the way with her was not really by choice. We were kind of living in crisis mode. And
so it just had to look different. Things. Yeah.
It had to. And that's when I realized it's okay to start things late and that they'll catch up anyway because they're ready and that you don't have to do all the subjects all the time. There was a lot I learned just with my second daughter because I had to. And then I started realizing I can do this with the third one too and the fourth one. And then,
yeah.
And it just made so much more sense. And now I realize that information is what will help people in the 21st century to go ahead and try homeschooling because it doesn't have to look like a public school at all.
Yes, more freeing. Actually, I have a teaching degree and people will say, okay. Oh, you're so lucky. Of course you can homeschool. And yeah. I think when I first started, I agreed with them. I was like, oh yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels awkward to say anyone can homeschool. So then you just say, oh yeah, well, it's not for everyone. And you know, maybe it's not,
right.
But it's not for everyone doesn't mean anyone can't do it.
It can't be.
And actually, I think my teaching degree is was a hindrance because I wasn't so quick.
You are so not the first person to say that.
I've heard it from where I think it's true because not only could I not think outside the box, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt so guilty. Like, the box was ideal, and anything I changed was less ideal. Like, wrong. I was failing or wrong or something. Like, it took a long time and a lot of books to unlearn what I thought it should be like.
Well, like I said, I was raised partly homeschooled, and so it even took that amount of time for me to let go of that concept, even though I had not spent the last half of my childhood in a public school classroom.
Right.
I still needed, as a mom, I had to figure all this out too over time. I think it's that temptation to think, well, if we're not busy for 8 hours today, then we're not doing something right, you know?
Right. Or even five, you know, like as if there's some magical time that constitutes you learn.
Exactly. Yes. It doesn't matter about the time or how many subjects or how many credits. Even in high school, I tell people, you know, if your kid is going to go to college, you need to keep track of credits. Otherwise, you need to think more about what is my child need to survive in the world? What kind of person am I raising and what can I give them to be that person that God created them to be? We're not just raising college students, which is kind of, it's such a short-term vision that people have where they think, well, I've got to get them into college. So here's what we have to do. And then we miss some very important things because we're worried about credits and transcripts. Even if you want to send your kids to college, do the transcript, do the credits, but please educate the whole child, you know, the whole person. Give them the tools to go out and live in the world on their own tomorrow, if necessary.
Yeah. And to keep learning, right?
Homeschoolers, yes. Homeschoolers generally still forget that part, that it's not just about the transcript. I really encourage people to think all the way through K through 12, what is really necessary for a well-educated person? And, you know, Airdrie family is going to have a little bit different answer to that. But the basics are math, reading, communication,
personal finance, you know,
some logic, you know, the ability to think critically and to speak well, to speak coherently so that you can communicate whatever message you have to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So give your kids the foundation to do that so that they actually are making a difference in the world.
Yeah.
That's really what it's about.
Yeah, that's such a good long-term vision. This is encouraging. I'm like ready for a new year now. In your book, you talked about kind of different styles and evaluating styles and how a lot of homeschoolers start out in a box in a traditional, and that could be helpful for just taking the plunge and reading the script. And then over time, we usually often, not always, become more eclectic. But you talked about your style. You described it as whole book. You were specific. You've pulled in other curriculums. You use Matthew C. You've used IEW. Yeah. But you have this vision of whole book as your kind of core style. Can you just describe that?
Yeah. I was first introduced to this kind of thinking when we used Sunlight curriculum.
Yes.
And it's very book-centered with a guide to teach through books, whether they're fiction or nonfiction. That really made a difference for us. And that was, goodness, 13 years ago, maybe, probably more than that. And I really liked it, but I wanted more. And so for a while,
like
I started
more books or more depth or
more depth. Yes, more detail, more books. And so I just started creating a very similar method of my own based on that style. And I should write this all down. It kind of evolved so that it did start including, like, you know, the copywork and language arts aspects of it. In short, where it's gotten to today is I use Mystery of History for our history curriculum, but it's very similar.
Yep.
There is a spine, there is a book, but there's a lot of suggested reading, and we do that reading. We don't, you know, read every single book that she recommends. That'd be
impossible. But if there's like historical fiction or nonfiction, like you have like supplemental books, you mean?
Yes. Okay. And they're all standard books you can get at the library or the bookstore.
Okay.
I use that and I build on that. I like to teach history chronologically, which is what she does in Mystery of History, with a lot of stories, because I think stories are what you remember most.
For sure.
That's how I grew up loving history, was through stories.
Yeah.
And so we follow the chronological timeline, but we read a lot of books. What I try to do is let history be the central focus of everything we do. That includes our language arts and our science, and of course, literature. Even though we will do separate science curriculum, we also will read through historical science, if that makes sense.
So, well, we're going into the Renaissance with my kids.
Me too.
Okay. Wow.
We just started the Renaissance.
Okay. We're starting like in January. So then I'm thinking, like, I was Googling Renaissance artists and Galileo, you know, I don't know. I have to learn it.
That's exactly how. So what I am doing in the Renaissance, we are barely in. We've just read about Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay.
That's, I mean, you can spend a couple of weeks, you can spend a year on him, honestly, because he was an artist and a scientist and an inventor. There's so much there. So we're reading about all the different Renaissance people. And of course, he's part of that, a big part of it. We have Berean builders, science, and I mean, any science curriculum that talks about Leonardo da Vinci and his inventions and, you know, his discoveries.
So then you'll pair that at the same time.
Yes. Do it while you're doing your Renaissance history, because it just, I mean, it's so much more relevant and interesting to everyone, and it makes more sense. And so when we follow science through history, we see how things change and thought processes changed, inventions came about, how they changed the world oftentimes. And so instead of, you know, doing science on a whole separate timeline, we pull the scientific timeline in with our history. And those people were influenced by the history that was happening to them at the time, and they influenced history. It just makes so much sense, especially with inventions and discoveries and things like that, to see it happening alongside artists and kings and wars and all that, because it's all related.
Yeah, kind of like piecing it all. Do you build, write, create, I don't know what the word is, but do you bring in timeline entries and stuff? Do you find that helpful for your kids?
Absolutely. Actually, we started our chronological history over about 3-4 years ago. And we start a timeline, and no matter what, we stick with that timeline. And I have a printable one that we just keep in a binder. And so everything we learn goes on the timeline. So they can flip all the way back to the beginning and see what they've already put in it. And now we're in the 1500s. And so,
is it a family timeline, or is it like everyone does their own?
Each has their own.
Okay.
I've seen families do it on the wall. Yeah. And so everybody gets to see it all the time, and they take turns adding to it. There's so many neat ways to do it. And we've done the wall before, but now I just, since they're older, I let them do them in a notebook.
In a notebook, yeah.
You can order printable timeline figures. So it has a picture of the person or event and a little description. We did that for a while, but mine have moved to the point where they just prefer to write it.
Just write
a
note.
So, you know, just be flexible. Move however your kids want to move. Timelines and maps to me are like, don't do history without those. Okay. It just helps everything make sense.
Yes.
We pull in art and music. Obviously, the Renaissance is full of art and classical music. So instead of having a separate art history curriculum and a separate classical music curriculum, if we're studying a certain year or a certain decade, even if our curriculum doesn't tell us a lesson on each of these people, I will just go online and look up who were all of the composers of the 16th century. I might not teach every single one of them, just but I want to pull out as many names. Yeah. And introduce my kids to the names and let them hear the music. The internet is so helpful for that. Same thing with the artists. You can go on YouTube and find a slideshow of all the art by all these different artists and just sit there and watch it and give your kids some exposure. You know, you don't have to do a complete separate curriculum.
Yeah.
Unless you want to, or you can get an art history curriculum and add it to your history timeline. Like there's a lot of ways to do it, but I keep everything on the history focused timeline. And the same with literature. I like to either read classic literature that was written during the time we're in or about the time we're in, or a historical fiction about someone. Like, you know, sometimes we'll read a true story of a famous person. Sometimes we'll read a historical fiction about an event. We've been doing some Reformation and Renaissance. Okay. And so there's different stories about the printing press or printing Bibles or martyrs. Actually, we read a story about who they think maybe the Mona Lisa was. Here's what we think could have happened. And it was interesting. My kids liked it. So I integrate literature in a lot of different ways, and it can be actual classic literature or just a good story that we found.
Yeah.
Again, all on the same timeline. And so I don't teach a history. I mean, I don't teach a literature curriculum. I just let them read literature.
You really let the history spine form your family.
I do.
Like your group study.
It forms almost everything.
Yeah.
Like I said, the copy work does the same thing. Not all the time, but a lot of the time copy work comes from something in history, whether it's a book we read, or it can even be a paragraph out of the history book. Like I said, a speech or a famous document, little pieces like that. So all the time we're doing all the different subjects, but it doesn't feel like different subjects. It's all kind of one thing.
It's kind of pulled in. You're not juggling five different teacher's manuals at three different grades levels. It's like you've really consolidated.
And I also don't want it to sound overwhelming, because we don't do all the things every day. You know, every lesson gives me a different idea of what I want to do. And of course, with Mystery of History and most history curriculum, they're going to give you a lot of suggestions. Options. Try these books, or how about this art project, or look up a video about this. So we don't do all those things every single day. We go with the flow of the lessons and the time period and our schedule.
Right.
Whether I'm feeling brave or not, you know. Yeah, sometimes we will cook and eat food that goes with a certain time. That's always fun. Even once a year, you know, have a big medieval banquet or something. Yep. That's fun. Or a craft project every now and then. I did a lot more crafts when the kids were little, but there's still things that teenagers like to do. I don't want it to seem like we do 10 things a day just for history.
It's just like over the course of maybe a whole school year.
Yeah. We try to keep it interesting and not stagnant.
Isn't that the challenge? It's not just like get it done. It's like we're going to engage.
Especially with teenagers, because they're kind of different when they, you know, and it depends on their personality, but there comes a point where they just think, Mom, why are we doing this? You know?
Right.
And I think, okay, when I get those grandbabies, we're going to have fun again.
Knowing the season.
Yeah. I still try really hard to make stuff for teenagers relevant to them so that they're not always saying, why do we even have to learn this? Because, you know, they do say that. I want them to understand. Why I want you to learn it. And if you eat the food that those people ate, or if you watch a video that shows how they dressed in the morning, you know, like it'll be a little bit more personal and you won't forget it. That's my goal. Like, don't forget this stuff. So how can I help you not forget what you learned? What can I do to make it you know, stick in your head.
Yeah, something you can take with you. I think in closing, I'm thinking about like your daughter, you said, wants to homeschool, or someone her age who's eager, ready, they're all bought in, and they're like, my kid's four, they're a little genius, and already they know their ABCs and they can count to 20. What do I do? You know, what would you tell them?
That's a really common question. So I usually answer this way. They don't need school necessarily, but they are ready to learn. Mm-hmm. The best way you can do that is through reading to them and play. Kids learn a lot through play. And so it's awesome if they are already counting and they know their ABCs. So you can teach so much through books. One of the best things I did was use five in a row when mine were little. And I did it, I think I started with my second kid and did it with everybody. And I've already told my daughter, this is what you want to start with, because it is just good quality children's books, but it gives you kind of a plan to bring out the educational parts of all those cute little picture books. Don't try to start them on a curriculum. Every kid can learn a lot of stuff in their head without a curriculum. And so that's why we see kids counting and saying their ABCs and even adding numbers and doing a lot of things that we think, oh, this kid is second grade level already. It's because it's natural to want to learn. Right.
They're figuring out the world. So they're like, how many more of this? How many?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've learned a whole language, you know, without a book. So just think about it that way. What else can they learn without me having to sit down and say, now it's time for school? You can take a walk outside or let them help you in the kitchen or fold towels, you know, feed the cat. Everything gives you an opportunity to teach your kids something. So look at life that way, especially through play and reading. There are so many other things kids do to learn that's not necessarily from a curriculum.
Zero in on that. Look for the opportunities. That's such good advice. And then what books would you give her? If you had to give her a few books to read and just, I feel like that's one of the biggest things is I'm always telling people, just wait a year and go read a bunch of books for yourself.
Absolutely.
Start that educating is a great yourself. Idea. So what would be your...
So my favorite one all these years is still Educating the Wholehearted Child by Clay and Sally Clarkson.
Yep.
That just says it all. Everything in there, she is my mentor. It is really about educating the wholehearted person and not just having school at home. The Clarkson kids are all grown and they are a testament to what Clay and Sally did. So when you read that, if you've never heard of them, look them up. All of their kids are very well educated, well spoken. They're successful in their field, very interesting, solid people. And so they wrote this book. I think maybe the first one came out in 1994.
Okay.
It's really just their blueprint. She recently published Awakening Wonder, and it's kind of the follow up to that book. And so those are two great ones that I would recommend.
Educating the Wholehearted Child is really long. So I feel like. That would give people
a reference.
A reference. That's a good way to put it. You don't like maybe I read it cover to cover and then I was like, okay, I have to
go back to it.
Yeah.
I still go back to it, guys. I'm 23 years into homeschooling and I still go back to it. Israel Wayne's book is very different. It's called Education, Does God Have an Opinion? It looks at it from the standpoint that, you know, we don't educate like the world. We are not going to be a copy of the public school system. So what does God tell us about education and what should we be striving for? So those are two very different ones, but they're my top two favorites that I recommend a lot.
Okay. I'm already sometime want to have a follow-up conversation about high school because that's like a whole nother thing. Okay.
It is. Yeah. I love talking about that. That's one of my favorite things. I really love teaching high school at home. And I never thought I'd say that because I'm not into science and math myself. And those are the scary things.
Right. The really in-depth the subject gets really deep.
Yeah. And it scares a lot of people. And I think that's what keeps a lot of people from homeschooling maybe. So I would love to do that sometime.
Okay. I would love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on with me. I have just
thanks for inviting me.
Loved this. And we'll have to talk about high school soon.
Let's do it. Thank you so much.
The show notes from today's episode are at musicalmemory.com/podcast. Before you close out of your app, would you take a second to subscribe to this podcast and leave a rating? That will help other people find it too. Thanks for listening and happy homeschooling.